Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I hope you're well.
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Well, Baruch Hashem, I'm well. Please join me in saying the Anna Bakoach. Anna Bakoach. Yidulach Shemincha. Gatish. Sevita. Alapikimu Yitach Tzadi. Kabel Rina. Amcha Sfagbeinu Achein Nora Tufreshayim Sintet Nun Nagibo Tovoshe Tufa Eva Shamrem Nun Gimel Dalad, Yud Kaf Shin. We use the sequence Yud Kaf Shin to take our body parts and return them to the stem cell state, where they can be rejuvenated, where they can be cleansed, where they can be healed. And when they are ready, we can return them back into our body, where they can become active again, doing their job, manner that they are supposed to, after having been healed, after having been rejuvenated. Barchem tacharem rachamim bikatcha tamid gamlem betet reish tzaditav gimel. The letters of the month of Av, the Kaf that created the sun, and the Tet that created the constellation Aryeh, the Leo, the lion. Pasin Kadosh, Bero Tuka, Adata. Et kufet, et nunayin. Shavatenu kabel. Excuse me. Yud gimelamet, pezayin kuf. Shavatenu kabel. Ushmati akateku. Dodea. Talumot Shin Kufav Bar Yuta. I'm looking for a piece of paper. I apologize for the delay. We're going to, before we say the eighth verse, we're going to read the verse from Samuel 2 that has a gematria of the value of next year. We're going to read it so that we can allow the letters to work their magic, to do their job, and help to change our consciousness so that we manifest the peace that is described in this verse. Vishamti makom le'ami le'Yisrael untati vishakan Pachta velo yirgas. Od velo yosefu. Bene avia. Leanoto kaasher. Barishona. In the eighth verse, we say in a whisper.
Baruch Shem, Yitol Olam Va'ed.
We're reading from the Zohar, from section 4 of Parashat Ekev, verse 69. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh adeinu konenei aleinu maaseh adeinu konenehu. Ilayim inun dika mishalvan. Had the Kali, had the Mahave, oh, had Kali, the Havre, Shor, Nesheraye, Adam, Eat Nahagan, the Razadi Arba, Shemahan, Galifin, Salkin. Lead Nahaga Ulis Takla. All these are integrated into each other and are comprised of each other, so that one should be included in the other. These, the ox, the eagle, the lion, and man, are maintained by the secret of the four engraved names, which are the great and mighty and awful El, which rise to maintain and observe. Rabbi Ashlag gives us the names, but they're the names of the Sephirot. And that's what this verse in the Zohar is alluding to. But without Rabbi Ashlag, we wouldn't really be able to understand that. So the great is chesed, as in the older days, older, not old. The older days, the Sephirah of Chesed was known as Gedulah, greatness. And mighty is Gevurah. And awful represents Tiferet. Why would awful represent Tiferet? Because we're talking about the eagle. The eagle is a wonderful bird, but the eagle is not a kosher bird. The reason it's not a kosher bird, that answer is why Tiferet is referred to as awful. It has both aspects, the positive aspect of the sun and the negative aspect of the sun. It will burn us if we're not careful, if our vessel isn't prepared. And it will warm and make us feel absolutely wonderful, as the Talmud says, sitting in the sun, basking in the sun, is 1/60th of the pleasure that we will receive in the world that is coming. And then the name of God, Kel, which is Malchut. Does anybody have questions? Can I stand out? Is available on the Hashem website. At the Revealed Wisdom page, if you scroll down, you will find the I'm looking for its location. I apologize, but I want to make sure where I was. The Advanced Reincarnation series of classes is in the second column from the left, the 11th row. And when you click on that, you can scroll down to class number 20 and click on the handout. There are not quite all of the previous classes on the page, but within a week or so, they will all be there. When class number 20, this handout opens up, it comes to Division of Adam's Soul, Chapter 6, Section 3, which is where we will begin. Are there any questions before I start? We're starting with my commentary. This section is an interruption. Actually, it's not really an interruption. But it looks like it's an interruption from the Ari, although he is well aware of the way the human being learns and processes information and transforms information into knowledge that potentially becomes wisdom. Between the previous section dealing with back-to-back creation and the next section dealing with the process of transforming back-to-back to face-to-face, this is what this section is interrupting. But it's not really interrupting. We need that break. We need this information to help us absorb and relate how back-to-back transforms to be face-to-face. The body and soul of Adam divides into 248 limbs, just as does his body. In addition, there are other aspects, such as the countless hairs that hang from his body. My commentary. Before I read my commentary, I will mention the body of man has 248 parts. The body of man has 365 sinews. The body of a woman has 4 additional parts and the same number of sinews. When a man and a woman come together, when they rejoin as one soul, like they do when they get married under the chuppah, they become 500 parts, which are really one soul. And those 500 parts, plus the 626 sinews, 500 is the Hebrew word ner, which is a code word for nefesh and ruach, two levels of soul, or neshama and ruach, two levels of soul. But the word ner means candle, and it hints at the idea of light, the light that is revealed when souls that have been split apart reunify. My commentary. Hair is a spiritual item that must be understood in a spiritual context. At the end of this section, I will have a small essay touching on this subject. Later in the Gates of Reincarnation, we will go into greater details on this subject. The Rav, Rabbi Isaac Luria, is referring to the spiritual counterpart of the body hair, not just limbs, but even incidental aspects, such as the spiritual counterparts of body hair, may be the roots of soul. All the sparks of the individual souls in this world are from these aspects that are within Adam. All of the specific souls and levels of souls that will later enter bodies born from Adam are called soul roots and are drawn from these aspects of Adam. Concerning each and every limb, it is exactly as the sages understood the verse. Where were you when I founded the earth? A verse from Job. This was discussed at length in chapter 3, section 2. The Hebrew words for where were you can also be construed to mean a lifeless lump. The roots of the souls that would descend from Adam were implanted within him. When Adam was only a lifeless lump, God breathed into him a living soul. At that time, the roots of the souls that would descend from Adam were implanted within him. When Job complained about his lot, God says to him, where were you when I founded the earth? In other words, if you do not know the root of your soul and where you were in the soul body of Adam when I bequeathed into him a living soul, then you do not know your own history. And if this is so, how can you complain about what happens to you? I didn't make commentary on it, but as I've read it again, it's really a very moving example. And it's teaching us what the Ari teaches in other locations. We need to know who we were in our last lifetime in order to achieve our tikkun. We need to know where we were when Adam created the mistake, because we participated in that mistake and ultimately must correct our share of that mistake. We have already explained that most souls are from Cain and Abel, the sons of Adam. This statement is problematic since there are several places in the writings of the Ari that seem to contradict it. See, for example, where he talks about the B'nai Aaron. From that time onward, they have since divided among all people ever born. Even though we won't explain this concept in detail now, since this is not the place to do so, we will provide an example of what it means. For example, suppose that Abel is the aspect of the head of all the souls. Then Abel would be the root of all the individual sparks of human souls that are in the aspect of the head. This is explaining it allegorically. But ultimately, there are three roots. Everybody was in Adam. Then Cain and Abel came, and some people from Adam became the souls of Cain and Abel. And then Cain and Abel made mistakes that lowered the spirituality of those people that were in Cain and Abel. So you have souls that are still lowered by Adam's mistake, and you have souls that were lowered by the mistake of Cain and the mistake of Abel. And we look at those three levels as sources for all of the humanity. There is a reason why there are three human races: Caucasian, Negro, and Oriental. Does the Oriental come from one of those three? That's never been written that I have read. Does Caucasian come from one of those three? Again, I've never seen it written. But there is a reason why there are three aspects to humanity called Negro, Caucasian, and Oriental. This type of Kabbalistic conception was discussed in the extended note to Chapter 5, Section 5, The Connected Levels of Soul. Please review it. Likewise, if our patriarch Abraham was the right arm of Adam, then all the individual sparks that belong to the right arm of Adam are included in Abraham. He will be connected. He will be considered the root of all of them. It is the same for every limb and hair of the soul of Adam. However, this is not the place for this discussion. My commentary. This is the promised discussion about the spiritual aspect of hair, what I'm reading now. Initially, there are a few paragraphs taken from an essay by Yosef Jacobson, who is a well-known speaker and writer on the subject of Kabbalah and Chassidut. His orientation is directly related to the Chabad organization. The Kabbalah of Hair. So how does Jewish mysticism view the significance of hair? Hairs act as straws, transmitting profound and inaccessible energy. Each strand of hair, shaped like a straw, which is the form of the Hebrew letter Vav, communicates a level of soul energy that, due to its intensity, cannot be communicated directly, only through the straw of hair, through the contracted and curtailed medium of hair, which dilutes the intense energy. Now, the Kabbalah distinguished between fine hair and coarse hair. The fine hair decorating the cranium, present immediately during birth, and the coarse hair of the beard appearing only at a male's entry into adulthood. The hair that links the fine and the coarse are the peyot. The hair extending from the skull down the jawbone, after which it merges with the beard. The hair growing on top of the cranium, the fine hair, represents the deeply concealed energy stemming from the interior of the skull. This is identified by Kabbalah as the location of the superconsciousness, the superconscious formations of the human psyche. The deepest and most primal forces of our psyche, the supranational desires and cravings of the soul, formulated even prior to the birth of cognition, are associated in Jewish mysticism with the skull, defined as the crown over the brain, simply as Keter, which means the crown. Keter is seen as the most lofty and elevated part of the soul, its link to God, who also transcends reason and logic. The hair of the male beard, on the other hand, the coarse hair, represents the energy stemming from the subconscious cognitive impressions of the human psyche, located within the higher and lower brains. This dimension of the human soul is known in Kabbalah as Mocha Stima'a, or the hidden cognition, and stands one rung below the level of Keter. This is the mystical reason for the feminine body not developing a beard. As mentioned above, the mystical function of hair is to access, in a contracted and curtailed fashion, energy that is inaccessible due to its profundity. Women, however, are naturally more in tune with their subconscious cognition and therefore do not require the straws of hair to access that level of self. I continue. The Arizal teaches above that the hair on Adam's body is a soul root, or a soul root source, for many various souls. In his commentaries on the Parashiyot, he relates additional information, which I am summarizing below. The Arizal teaches that there are 13 components of the hair in the beard, and relates these to the 13 attributes of mercy as taught in the Sefer Shemot. He also indicates that there are 9 locations of hair on the body, which relate to the 9 components of hair as taught in Sefer Bamidbar. It may be the Sefer Devarim. I always get them confused. But together, the 13 plus the 9 are equal to 22. Thus, there is a relationship between these 22 location types of hair and the Hebrew letters and the types of human soul roots. Elsewhere, the Arizal explains that the hair of the beard is actually light of the soul that is extending down into the body. As it travels through the narrow place, the neck, not all of the light is able to descend. Thus, this light bursts through the skin and becomes the beard. This is due to the nature of light, which is to expand and share itself. This same explanation applies to the hair on the body. Since the woman at the time of puberty does not have her own mochin, her own brain, metaphorically brains, but receives this through the antenna of her head hair from the universe in general, until she becomes married and then starts to receive the energy, this energy from her husband. The Arizal teaches that this is the reason why a woman does not grow a beard, while a man does grow a beard. The Kabbalah teaches that the hair on the head of a woman is drawing the energy of judgment, Geburah, while this is especially true during her period, since the blood is indicating a period of judgment, since there was an opportunity to bring a child, which is a large revelation of life that was missed, was lost. The hair on the head of a man is drawing the energy of chesed, which is why the man wears the tefillin on the head. That's the end of section 3. Are there any questions? Eight levels of repentance. Chapter 6, section 4. We're now going to learn how do we transform the creation that is back to back into the creation that is face to face. Now we will explain the individual types of teshuva, repentance, that a person must perform, and through them you will understand a little of this analysis. Now, somebody could be asking or will ask later, or back to back, how is it teshuvah to become face to face? And that's one of the major teachings of Kabbalah that people don't get. Someone has a genetic, a gene in their chromosome. They have a DNA sequence that will cause them to have a disease, or that will cause them to be oriented to be becoming gay, or it will cause them some aspect of tikkun. Most people say, we can't blame these people for their genetic defect. It's the roll of the dice in the universe. But the Kabbalah asks the question, why did this soul come into this body that was formed with this genetic defect? Because Kabbalah knows that nothing physical is a cause. So there must be a spiritual cause for that soul to come into that body who has that spiritual, that genetic defect. The Ari is telling us that the process of going from back to back to face is an aspect of teshuvah, of repentance. Because we weren't supposed to be born back to back. And yet we were created back to back. How do we handle that paradox? Because in the spiritual world, there were mistakes made that caused the physical creation of men and women back to back. Men and women are one soul. Male and female is one soul. But they weren't supposed to come into this world back to back. They did so because of mistakes that were made in the process, the evolutionary process, of coming from the end soul into the physical world. This is a very deep secret. It's a very significant teaching, and it's something for you to be aware of. In this section, the Rav is continuing the discourse that he began in the beginning of the chapter. The souls that were created from the unification of back-to-back are destined to return, ascend, and to be reborn in the unification of face-to-face. In order for this to happen, 8 levels of teshuvah must be attained. There are 8 levels, 8 divisions of teshuvah. Each specific place in the soul body of Adam contains the root of all the 4 worlds of Abaya, Asiya, Riya, Yetzirah, and Atzilut, Atzilut. The Teshuvah discussed here concerns the rectification of damage that was done by sin in the roots of the souls, in the soul body of Adam. The higher one soul root, the greater the damage his sin will cause. metaphorically, I'm taking an aside here, my own commentary that's not in the handout. Metaphorically, a mayor who's elected in a city of Los Angeles who has, I'm making up a number, 10 million people. So he represents 10 million people. And a mayor of the city of Las Vegas has a 500,000 people. The mayor of Los Angeles, when he makes a mistake that affects 10 million people, it has more impact, more pain, more suffering, more chaos than the mayor of Las Vegas when he makes a mistake. This is what's being said here metaphorically. First of all, if a person has a nefesh from the world of Asiyah and he sins, he causes a separation of the world of Yetzirah from that of Asiyah in the specific place from which the root of his soul is suspended. This person's teshuvah would reunite Asiyah with Yetzirah on the level of the root of his nefesh. Similarly, if someone who was Ruach from Yetzirah sins, he will need to rejoin Yetzirah to Briah on the level of his roots. Likewise, someone who has a Neshama from Briah must return to Briah, reunite Briah to Atzilut. These are the three levels of the Teshuvah from the lower worlds of Briah, Yetzirah, and Asiyah. There are also another explanation for why there are the three races of man, the Negro, the Caucasian, and the Oriental. There are five higher levels of Teshuvah in the world of Atzilut itself. The first is to cause the return of Malchut of Atzilut to its place, which is below the Yesod, in the specific level of the soul root, as we have discussed. The information of being described by the Rav here corresponds to an important introductory lesson in the book Etz Chaim, the book that Rabbi Chaim Vital wrote. The palace of the consort of Zeranpin, and especially the gate of the moon's diminution, concerning the tikkun of Malchut of Atzilut in each successive stage of correction. She ascends through Atzilut until she reaches the stage of the unification of face-to-face with Zeranpin. In the first stage, her starting point, Atzilut, she is below the Yesod of Zeranpin. This is before she is a Partsuf, where she is only a point. The second stage is to return her to a higher place, which is what Nehi, that's Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida, levels of soul at the higher levels. The place from which she emanated, as is known. Nehi is the acronym for the Sefirot of Netzach, Hod, and Yesod, as well. At first, Nukva of Zeranpin is a point under the Yesod of Zeranpin. When she begins to grow, she becomes a full partsuf from the back of the chest of Zeranpin, extending downward to the end of his feet on the floor of Atzilut. This is when Zum, Zeranpin, Vnukva, are connected back to back, and she receives all of her light from him. Then she begins to receive light that is imparted to her. The chest of Zeronpien is above Nahi, often described as being located two-thirds of the way up to Ferret. But sometimes the Rav will designate it as Nahi. These are code phrases that the commentary is trying to explain to you. When she is only a point below Yesod, she has not yet begun any tikkun at all. When she begins to get tikkun, correction, then she begins to receive light that is imparted to her from Zeronpien. This light is transmitted to her from a point that is in the back of the chest of Zeronpien. Therefore, this point, which the Rav is calling Nahi, is called the point from which she has emerged, and so it is known throughout the Kabbalah. The third stage returns her to a yet higher level, to the Chesed Gevura Tiferet level. Chesed Gevura Tiferet denotes the Sefirot of Chesed Gevura and Tiferet. She is still on the back of Zeronpien, although she has probably reached the apogee of her growth there. Although this point is only also not exactly equivalent to the Chesed Gevura Tiferet of Zeronpien, but is a bit higher. This is just before the Nesirah. See the end of section 2 of chapter 6. Remember, Dormita is sleeping and Nesirah is separation. The fourth stage is to cause her to return to a higher level, to Chesed, to Chachma, Bina, and Dat, which are the three Mochin of Zeronpien. Chachma, Bina, and Dat refers to Chachma, Bina, and Dat. These are the Mochin, or the brains of the Partsuf, as one might surmise from the translations of these terms. Wisdom is Chachma, understanding is Bina, and knowledge is Dat. Probably the Rav is referring here to the stage where Nukva is face to face with Zeronpien, and nearly equal in stature to him. And just before unification, at this stage, the Keter of Zeronpien is still higher than the Keter of the Nukva, and she is receiving her light from him. It is referred to by the nomenclature of Chachma, Bina, and Dat, because that term indicates the internal aspect of the front face of the Partsuf. And it is appropriate here because they are face to face. These four elevations are all within the level of Zeronpien. There is a fifth Teshuvah, more essential and elevated than the rest of them, and that is to elevate it, the Malchut of Atzilut, to the level of Abba and Ima. This is the level where the unification of face-to-face takes place. Her Keter is now equivalent to the Keter of Zeronpien. They receive their levels of Keter directly from Abba and Ima. Indeed, their levels of Keter were once part of the bodies of Abba and Ima. Therefore, it is appropriate to call this the level of Abba and Ima. Also, the Nufa will now receive her light directly from Ima, without any intermediary. This level is alluded to in the Sefer HaTikkunim, and it is called the eighth level. because Ima, Bina, is the eighth from below to above. Normally, Bina is called the eighth because it is the eighth Sephirah counting from below to above. Here also, it is the eighth level of Teshuvah. My commentary. In my opinion, the abbreviations become confusing in this section. So here is a summary, a review. Number one, Zeranpin is a full partsuf of 10 Sephirot. Nukva is a single point. They are back-to-back with the Nukva being below the level of spinal column of Zeranpin. Actually, Zeranpin has 9 complete Sephirot and a Nukva that is a point. Zeranpin is feeding the Nukva directly, and she grows to become the level of the last third of the Sephirot. This is called Yesod, Hod, and Netzach. They are still back-to-back. Number three, Zeranpin is continuing to feed the Nukva, and she continues to grow to become the middle third, which is Tiferet, Gevurah, and Chesed. They are still back-to-back, although there are now the beginnings of 2 different spines. The fourth stage, also called first stage of Atzilut, Zeranpin is continuing to feed the Nukva directly. She grows the level of a full partsuf to include Bina, Achma, and Keter. They are still back-to-back. The fifth stage, also called the second stage of Atzilut, Zeranpin is still feeding her, and she continues to grow, moving back to her original location of the Asod, Od, and Netzach of Zeranpin. The areas, they are still back-to-back in this fifth stage. In the sixth stage, also called the third stage of Atzilut, Zeranpin is still feeding her. There are now 2 complete spines, with the Malchut being slightly above Zeranpin. They are still back-to-back, although this is the point of Nasira, separation, as explained in Section 2. The seventh stage, also called the fourth stage of Atzilut, they move to be face-to-face, while she continues to grow her mochin, her brain. The level of Bina, Chachma, and Dat. The eighth stage, also called the fifth stage of Atzilut. They are now face-to-face. In this stage, she grows a Keter, and this Keter rises to the same level as Zeranpin. The Nukva begins to receive directly from the level of Bina. Does anybody have any questions? The end of the section.
I have a question, but I'm not sure I should ask it because I came in late or not.
Well, go ahead and ask it, Bob. If it's not appropriate, I'll let you know.
So we're talking about the male and the female's relation to each other with reference to the Tree of Life, correct? And I'm the differences in which we share energy, I think. I'm confused as to why we're talking about initially the spines are together and then they separate, because the spinal columns are like a physical attribute of the body, and the sephirot are more like an energetic.
The Am
I way off
levels?
Base?
No, you're not way off base, and it's an excellent question. And I never addressed the first statement that you made because I had hesitancy in saying yes to that statement. Yes, it's true, but also no, it's not true. So that statement, let's understand what we are dealing here. We are dealing with metaphors. Are we talking about the tree of life? Yes. Are we talking about male and female and souls? Yes. Are they the same thing? Yes and no. And that's where the confusion is coming. And that's why it takes reading this material all the way through to the end, which is going to take us another 100 or so classes, and then returning to the beginning and reading it through again. This is the way the Ari teaches. This is the way Rabbi Chaim Vital writes. And this is also the way Rabbi Ashlag presents the material. He doesn't define things sufficiently at the beginning. He just uses terms, but he doesn't tell you what they are. And then later in the process, he defines the terms. But you don't really understand the terms, even though you've read the English words or the Hebrew words. It doesn't make it's not resonating with you. And then you finish the material. And now you come back to the beginning, and you read the beginning again, but now you have an understanding of definitions. And what you didn't understand before, you have a better understanding of. And you have to do this cycle, some people, 100 times. Some people twice, four times.
Can you hear me, Hanok?
Yes, go ahead.
I totally understand what you mean, and this is your description is consistent with the way that I am learning the Kabbalah. There are dangling references that hook up months or years later. Thank you.
Correct. Yes. That's the way the human being has to learn this material. So now, once we have this kind of understanding of the structure, yes, we're talking about the tree of life, but we're also talking about male and female souls. But we're also talking about male and female souls are not a full soul. And that's what this section is really focusing on.
As if the main soul root were torn into male and female components.
Yes. And to truly understand that conceptually, in the world of the En Sof, there was only a soul, male and female combined. The male was the external aspect and the female was the internal aspect. And they lived together, so to speak, in the concept of the female looking behind, outward from the inside towards the behind, and the male looking outward toward the front. And there was only one spine. What does that mean in a spiritual context? We're not defining. Now, when the process, the evolutionary process of coming down from the endless world, that process followed the following pattern. There are circular vessels and there are straight lines. The Creator withdrew into the sides of the circle. These are metaphors. So try and realize we're not talking about a physical circle. But what does a physical circle represent? What does a straight line represent? This evolutionary process that the Tsimsum took place, the Creator withdrew to the outside of the circle or sphere or all 10 dimensions. And now a straight line came into this empty space, went down a little bit, and now started to expand into another circle. And as it expanded into another circle, there was nothing else. There was still empty space below it. And only when that outer circle, that ninth circle, was totally filled, did the straight line then expand further into the empty space. And then it went a little bit further down, and another circle came out. And it went through these steps of circle, line, circle, line, 10 times. That's one metaphor to understanding the evolutionary process.
Question?
It's composed of two aspects. Circles are male, lines are female. Or maybe it's the other way around. It's actually the way I said it. But these are all different metaphors to help us understand when we look in this physical world, there was a soul who was part of the endless vessel, and it, now in the physical world, it's two parts of people. One is male and one is female. How did that happen? Why did that happen? That is the process that is being explained in this section. There was one spine, whatever that meant in the spiritual level, and it went through eight steps called steps of teshuvah, of repentance, of correction, in order to change itself from one person back to back, one soul back to back, into two people face to face. And in order to have that happen, that one spine had to grow into two spines. But why did it grow? Where did the energy come from? That's what's explained in this section. I'm sure you don't fully understand it yet. And you also, I'm not really giving you practical aspects of it yet. Do you have other questions?
I do, but I'm going to hold them. I understand that everything that I'm supposed to know about that message, I do right now.
Baruch Hashem. This next section, which is the last section of chapter 6, it's the last section of chapter 6, is titled Hidden Effect of Sin, chapter 6, section 5. It is important to know that the impact of one's sin is dependent upon the level of his soul. Thus, someone whose nefesh is from the Malchut of Atzilut will cause a blemish in that level and to his soul root there. This is the case for the rest of the levels of soul. Before I go any further, just to clarify, in the physical world, somebody does a sin, a mistake. Metaphorically, the soul root is harmed. How did that happen? How does that relate? These two parts relate from different worlds. We're not addressing that question. That comes later. However, if a person in a previous Gilgul incarnation had a nefesh and a ruach from Asiya and Yetzirah, and then sinned and blemished the ruach, this would necessitate reincarnation into a second person, even if only the nefesh returned into this second person. When he sins, he blemishes Yetzirah, as if he had also received the level of ruach. This is saying you have two levels of soul, nefesh and ruach. They're in one body, and the sin is made at the level of the nefesh and the ruach. They both get harmed, and their soul root gets harmed by that effect. Now they have to reincarnate, but the nefesh goes into one body, and the ruach goes into another body, as we talked about the concept of the convert. Now the nefesh in the one body does another sin. The ruach in the second body is affected by that second mistake, even though it's not in the body and didn't do it. But because of their connection, we're not explaining it, we're just making the statement. In his previous Gilgul, he blemished both the nefesh and the ruach. Only nefesh reincarnates. Nevertheless, if he sins in the new Gilgul, it will also blemish the world of Yetzirah, as if he had also received the ruach. Because he had ruach in a previous Gilgul, he can blemish it again in his current Gilgul, even though he currently only has a nefesh. Also, when he, the second person, wants to do teshuvah, he must perform a tikkun as if he had blemished the nefesh and the ruach. He only has a blemished nefesh, but he must repair the damage as if he had both nefesh and ruach, even though a blemished nefesh and the ruach cannot reincarnate together. Also regarding teshuvah, it is necessary to know the manner of one's Gilgulim, which we will briefly explain now based upon what we have discussed in other places. This is a continuation of the subject of teshuvah, which was discussed in the last section, meaning this concept of building the second spine and creating the condition where a back-to-back condition becomes a face-to-face condition. Suppose that a person, for example, reincarnated 20 to 30 times beforehand. He will need to know if the first ones had nefesh, ruach, and neshama from Bria, Yetzirah, and Atzilut, and if he blemished them. If that is the case, then all the subsequent 30, even if the nefesh alone entered each one, will have to rectify as if they blemished all of Bria, Yetzirah, and Atzilut. Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiyah. Since the first one that preceded all of them was a nefesh that received light from the neshama of Bria. Thus, to complete his teshuvah, he will have to return the light that it, his soul, had in the beginning. Although the nefesh only is in reincarnating in the current Gilgul, he must rectify all three levels of the soul. This is because all three levels of the soul were blemished together in the first Gilgul. The reason for this is that the nefesh received light from the higher levels when they reincarnated together. Rectification of the nefesh includes rectification of the higher lights. that had become part of her existence. And these higher lights belong to the Ruach and the Neshama. Furthermore, this phenomena has very important implications for some of the things that we observe in this world. This is the esoteric meaning of the verse, for she has taken from the hand of God double for all her sins. It's a verse from Isaiah. One cannot grasp such matters, but he must trust that all God does is righteous. Sometimes a person will commit a relatively light sin, but they will be very strict and very exacting with him, punishing him. I don't like to use the word punishing because there is no reward and punishment. There's only cause and effect. A very exacting with him because the effect is as if he committed a severe sin, twice what he actually did. Thus, one cannot fully fathom the ways of God when he sees someone experiencing this. One cannot grasp such matters, but he must trust that all God does is righteous and with justice. It seems that he is getting a double effect, something completely disproportionate relative to the sin. But it is because he is having the effect for the blemishes caused by this sin and his sin in the higher worlds of Yetzirah and Briah as well. He needs to return the light that has fallen from Briah and Yetzirah due to that sin. It must be returned to its source. When one who does not have this special knowledge about the roots of Gilguls sees a case of retribution that is apparently inordinate relative to the sin, he may begin to doubt, God forbid, the justice of the divine system of reward and punishment. Therefore, he must trust that all God does is righteous and with justice. However, suppose from the first Gilgul through the ninth of the 30, he only merited a Nefesh and a Ruach. But for the tenth Gilgul, he merited a Neshama. He then sins and blemished it. Any sins that resulted during the first nine blemished the Ruach, and even more so the Nefesh. However, regarding the tenth and those after it, through the 30th, the blemish and tikkun will also affect the neshama. Based upon this, you should be able to figure out any other case. Thus, we find that a person cannot do complete teshuvah, as it should be done, until he knows his soul root and the levels of gilgulim of his souls that preceded him. The Zohar, when discussing the verse, "Tell me, you whom my soul loves," a verse from Song of Songs, is adamant about this. It discusses there at length that a person needs to know the identity of his soul, why it has come into this world, and what it needs to rectify. Without this knowledge, it cannot achieve its tikkun, and must return until it gains this knowledge, which is why in our generation the Kabbalah must be studied by every human being. Obviously, this requires knowledge beyond the normal, and the commentator is giving us two different books that discuss this point. My commentary, later in these classes we will discuss techniques for finding out about your soul root and the other information that you need to complete your tikkun. if you want. It's not written here. But if you write down this sequence, and eventually I will put it into the revealed wisdom, what's it called, the matrix. The link is at yeshem.com/Kabbalah-Tikkun-Example.htm. I do have a class where I have explained this handout, this matrix, and all of the information that is available through the Kabbalah that is needed for someone to achieve complete tikkun. Sometimes people don't need all of the little details, and sometimes they do. I'm hoping when the world is ready, whether it's done through the Yeshem organization and the Yeshem website, or it's done through other organizations, that this system will be automated so that people can type in their name, their father's name, and their astrological information, their birth dates, and the cities in which they've lived. And all of the information relative to their tikkun and the parashah that they were born with, into. All of these are hints to know about your correction. Does anybody have any questions? By the way, it's example.htm. Always remember the HTM. Are there any questions? The next class is 10 p.m. Thursday, which is a Zohar class. I've had a request for a Zohar class to be done in the evenings, and I'm contemplating doing that. But it probably will not start until I move, which the week of August 11th, Sunday, August 11th, I'll be moving from San Francisco to Carson City, Nevada. I will still continue to teach in Sacramento on Monday evenings. And there will be a class in the Carson City, Pot Lake Tahoe, Sparks, Nevada, Reno, Nevada, all of those areas on Sunday. Time and location have not yet been set. Next Monday, well, this coming Sunday at 10:30 in the morning, we are starting our 7, 8, or 9 weeks of preparation for the high holidays. And this whole discussion that we went through about back-to-back becoming face-to-face and the process of growing a spine and the process of teshuvah is exactly the same thing that happens every year from this point in the calendar until the 22 days of the high holidays are over. On Rosh Hashanah, every soul is recreated in the back-to-back condition. And then, over those 22 days, it grows a second spine and transforms itself from back-to-back to face-to-face. We need to prepare ourselves to understand the process. We need to prepare ourselves to understand the tools that the holidays represent. This coming Sunday will be the first of those 7, 8, or 9 classes. Monday morning at 5 a.m. will be the 9th class of the Sefer Yetzirah series. The 5:30 class in Sacramento is a basic class dealing with Teshuvah. And since we're in this period of Teshuvah, it would be good to review that basic class on what is Teshuvah. And then at 8:30, we will start or continue the second class of Rabbi Ashlag's Esther Sefirot Sefer. And of those who listened, I'm sure felt it to be a very dramatic class, very significant. Are there any questions? Have a beautiful evening. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you, teacher. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.